Right. What we are going to be doing today is, at this time, I'm going to be giving a teaching on what the rabbis teach about the lost 10 tribes. And this is actually in two parts. This will be the part one of the teaching. And then, hopefully, following the teaching, we'll be able to have Joel and Sagiv share what's happened the past week and give you a worldwide biblical Zionist update. So let's begin by the teaching on what the rabbis teach about the lost 10 tribes. From the Torah Anthology on page 459, it explains that Joseph being united with his brothers is a foreshadowing of the ultimate redemption. The story of Joseph and his brothers, Genesis chapter 38, verse 50, hey, have them be quiet back there, is not an unfolding of chance events. Every detail stemmed from God and served His purpose. For the Almighty unfolded the deeds of the fathers as a sign for the descendants. The conflict between Joseph and his brothers were an indication regarding the future splitting of the kingdom of Israel into the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Ephraim, son of Joseph. When later Joseph made himself known to his brothers, the reconciliation which ensued alludes to a future time. The two kingdoms will reunite into a single dominion. Thus the Midrash teaches, and he sent Judah before him to Joseph to show the way before him to Goshen. Genesis 46:28. The scripture writes, the wolf and the lamb will feed together. Isaiah 65:25. The wolf is Benjamin, and the lamb represents the 10 tribes, as it says, Israel is a scattered sheep, Jeremiah 50, verse 17. And the lion will eat straw, Isaiah 62:25. The lion is Judah, as it said, Judah is a lion's whelp, Genesis 49 verse 9. The ox is Joseph, 65:25, as it says, let the blessing come upon the head of Joseph, his firstborn ox. Deuteronomy chapter 3 verse 17. Joseph and Judah are two royal figures. From the art scroll of Genesis, volume 2, page 1922, explains there were two majestic royal figures among the brothers, Joseph and Judah. The split had taken place when the brothers rejected Joseph's dreams and his claim to leadership, even his claim to brotherhood. Do you remember the principle that what happens to the forefathers happens to the descendants? We just saw it on the last slide. That being the case, that the split between the two houses of Israel came historically as a result of Joseph's dream and his claim to leadership, even his claim to brotherhood. What is part of the split over today? The claim of brotherhood. We are a part of the same family. Next. Joseph was given the scepter and, Judah was given the scepter and Joseph the birthright and the firstborn blessing. Genesis 49:10. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. 1 Chronicles chapter 5 verses 1 and 2, it is written, now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but forasmuch as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel. And genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright. For Judah prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler. But the birthright was Joseph's. From the Art Scroll of Genesis, volume 2, page 1923, it further explains the concept that Joseph uniting with his brothers is a foreshadowing of the redemption at the end of the ages. the reunion of Joseph and Judah brought about the redemption of their family from the exile of antagonism and isolation and paved the way for the growth of Israel into a great and a mighty nation. The Midrash also implies that the redemption from the current last exile is foreshadowed in the Egyptian experience. Joseph's personal exile from his family is likened to the national history of the last 19 centuries. Look at this statement. If the renewed love of those brothers are duplicated by their modern descendants, our redemption will come as did theirs. And I believe that is what you are beginning to see with the worldwide biblical Zionists, is the start of the process where there is a renewed love of the entire family of Israel by the modern descendants, which will bring about the redemption. Next. Historically, the tribe of Ephraim left 30 years early from Egypt. From the Midrash Rabbah, Volume 9, page 115. The children of Ephraim were as archers handling the bow. This is from the book of Psalms and chapter 78, verse 9. Once in the days of Shulalak, the son of Ephraim, as it says, the children of Ephraim were as archers handling the bow. They reckon that the 400 years of bondage began from the time when the decree was announced, when God spoke with Abraham between the pieces in Genesis 15. But it really began from when Isaac was born. What did they do? They assembled and went forth to battle, and many of them were slain. Why was this? Because they did not believe in the Lord and did not trust in His salvation, but anticipated the end and transgressed the adjuration. In the Sanchino Midrash Rabbah, Volume 3, page 253, it says, "But Ephraim shall bring forth his children to the slayer." Hosea in chapter 9, verse 13. "It was the Philistines who slew them, as it says, the sons of Ephraim, Shulah, whom the men of Gath that were born in the land slew." This is from 1 Chronicles in chapter 7 and verse 20. Ephraim and Judah differed ideologically and politically. That would be the historical northern kingdom and southern kingdom. From the book A Matter of Return by Rabbi Raphael Eisenberg on page 129, it says, "The 10 tribes seceded from the tribes of Judah and Benjamin in the days of King Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. Jeroboam reigned over the 10 tribes, known as the Kingdom of Israel, while Rehoboam remained as the ruler of the Kingdom of Judah. The two groups differed not only politically, but they differed ideologically as well. The Kingdom of Judah adhered to God and His commandments, while the Kingdom of Israel was called Ephraim after the leading tribe of the secessionists, turning to idolatry and assimilation among the neighboring countries." Next. Who of the 10 tribes were exiled first? From the Sanchino Midrash Rabbah, Volume 7, page 7, it says, "In what order were they exiled?" Rabbi Eliezer said, "The tribes of Reuben and Gad went into exile first." Rabbi Nachman said, "The tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali went into exile first." From the Torah Anthology of the 12 Prophets, Volume 2, page 117, it explains that the 10 tribes were exiled in 3 stages. And the exile of the tribes of Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh from the other side of the Jordan River, 1 Chronicles chapter 5, verse 26. And then we have the banishment of the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali from 2 Kings chapter 15, 29. Thus it says that Sennacherib captured the Galilee area, the land of Naphtali. He exiled them to Assyria. And then from 2 Kings chapter 17, we have the ultimate exile when the Assyrians came into Samaria and took the 10 tribes captive. From the Sanchino book on the 12 prophets, volume 1, page 6, it explains that the first stage of the taking of the 10 tribes happened when the Assyrians took the tribe of Naphtali from 2 Kings chapter 15:29, and then the second phase of the exile of the 10 tribes was those tribes that were east of the Jordan River, and then we have the final exile of the tribes of Israel. So there is a difference of opinion on the order of the taking of the 10 tribes. So the first exile of the 10 tribes by the Assyrians is from 2 Kings chapter 15 verse 29, which says, "In the days of Pekah king of Israel came Tiglath-Pileser king of Assyria, and he took various cities, including the Gilead and the Galilee, and all the land of Naphtali, and he carried them captive to Assyria." The second exile of the 10 tribes from 1 Chronicles chapter 5 and verse 26 says, "And the God of Israel stirred up the spirit of Pul, king of Assyria, and the spirit of Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, and he carried them away, even the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half-tribe of Manasseh, and brought them unto Halah and Habor and Harah, and to the river Gozan unto this day." Now we have the final exile from 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 1, 3, and 5. "In the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, began Hoshea, the son of Elah, to reign in Samaria. Against him came up Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, and Hoshea became his servant and gave him presents. Then the king of Assyria came up throughout all the land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years. Continuing on, 2 Kings 17, verse 6 and verse 23, "In the 9th year of Hosea, the king of Assyria took Samaria, and he carried Israel into Assyria and placed them in the cities of the Medes, until Yahweh removed Israel out of his sight, as he said by all of his servants, the prophets. So was Israel carried away out of their own land to Assyria, as it is unto this day." The 10 tribes forsook the following of Torah. 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 7 and 8, it is written, "For so it was that the children of Israel had sinned against Yahweh their Elohim, which brought them up out of the land of Egypt, from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and feared other gods. And they walked in the statutes of the heathen, whom Yahweh cast out from before the children of Israel, and of the kings of Israel, which they had made." In 2 Kings 17, verse 24, it says, "And the king of Assyria brought men from Babylon, and he placed them in the cities of Samaria instead of the children of Israel." Now, this is a method of Assyrian conquest. It is intermingling, wherein, as we saw here, the king of Assyria brought those from Babylon and settled them into Assyria, settled them into Samaria, and took those of the 10 tribes from Samaria, took them back to Assyria. And the reason why this was done is because when children would be born from these mixed marriages, the military strategy is it would decrease the chance that the children born would have an animosity toward their captors, since one of their parents would be from Assyria. And so one a possibility of how you could interpret Micah chapter 5 verse 5 regarding the end of days, it says, "And this man shall be the peace when the Assyrian shall come into our land, and when he shall tread in our palaces, then we will raise against him 7 shepherds and 8 principal men." Now, when it says the Assyrian will come into our land, I believe, in part, it's speaking about the end of days, and the one who would be coming militarily against Israel would have the military mindset of the Assyrians. And the way this is manifested today is through international troops, a coalition of international troops. That is an Assyrian method of war and conquest. Continue on. "The Samaritans are Israelites," from the book The Messianic Idea in Israel by Joseph Klausner on page 186, it says, "The Samaritans were descended from Ephraimites who intermingled more or less with the Assyrian colonists." Well, there are those today that say all the 12 tribes have already been reunited. Well, if the 10 tribes were Samaritans, we read in our New Testament how the Jews and the Samaritans did not get along, and they were a separate peoples. Now, the southern kingdom was taken captive by the Babylonians, 2 Kings 24, verse 10 and 15. "At that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. And he carried away Jehoiakim to Babylon, and the king's mothers and the king's wives and his officers, and the mighty of the land. Those carried he into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon." So let's summarize what we've covered so far in the teaching. Joseph's unification with his brothers foreshadows the unification of the 10 tribes, Ephraim and Judah, in the end of days. The tribe of Ephraim left Egypt 30 years early and were killed by the Philistines in the land of Canaan. The 10 tribes of Ephraim were taken into captivity by the Assyrians in 3 stages. The Assyrians settled some of their people where the 10 tribes lived, and in their intermarriage, they were called Samaritans. And the 10 tribes of Ephraim and Judah differed religiously and politically. There's a prophecy regarding the northern kingdom that even though they had walked in darkness, meaning they departed from Torah, that they would see a great light. The great light is a reference to the Messiah. We're doing a teaching on what the rabbis say about the 10 tribes. Isaiah chapter 9, verses 1 and 2. "Nevertheless, the dimness shall not be such as was in her vexation, when at the first he lightly afflicted the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. And afterward he did more grievously afflict her by the way of the sea, beyond Jordan and Galilee of the nations." The people that walked in darkness, that's the northern kingdom, departing from Torah, have seen a great light. That would be the Messiah. So here is the prophecy that the Messiah... Welcome, Ray. This is a prophecy that the Messiah would come and administer in the Galilee area. Next. Matthew chapter 4, verse 12. "Now when Yeshua had heard that John was cast into prison, he departed into Galilee." The reason why Yeshua spent much time ministering in the Galilee is he was showing that he's the Messiah, and he came to and he came to show mercy and compassion upon the northern kingdom who was taken captive. In Matthew chapter 4, verse 13, it says, "And leaving Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum." Capernaum is the Strong's number 2584 in the Greek dictionary, and Capernaum in Hebrew is Kfar Nachum, which means the village of comfort. Capernaum is the village of comfort. Comfort is associated with the end of the exile of the house of Jacob. Isaiah 40 verse 1, comfort ye my people. Isaiah 40 verse 2, speak comfortably to Jerusalem. So in speaking about comfort, this is what's associated with that thought. Isaiah 40 verses 10 and 11. Behold, Yahweh Elohim will come with a strong hand, and his arm will rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work is the gathering of the exiles of Israel. His work is before him. He, the Messiah, will feed his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs. So his work is the comfort of Jerusalem. And in order to foreshadow that Yeshua came to gather the exiles of Israel, his ministry is in the Galilee, and he is ministering at a place called the Village of Comfort. It was a declaration that he's the Messiah, and he came to redeem the house of Jacob with a particular emphasis on the northern kingdom. We can see how comfort is associated with the end of the exile from Jeremiah 31, verse 10, 13, 16, and 17. Hear the word of Yahweh, all ye nations, and declare it in the isles afar off, and say, he that scattered Israel will gather him and keep him as a shepherd does his flock. The gathering of the exiles of Israel is associated with comfort, and it is associated with marriage. Then shall the virgin rejoice in the dance, both young men and old together. I will turn their mourning into joy. The mourning is the exile. The joy is the end of the exile. And I will comfort them. The joy is I will comfort them. Jeremiah 31, verses 16 and 17. Thus says Yahweh, refrain your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears. For your work shall be rewarded, says Yahweh, and they will come again from the land of the enemy. And there is hope in your end, says Yahweh, that your children will come again to their own border. Notice, it's when, this is referring to Rachel's children, specifically Jeremiah 31, verse 20, Ephraim. When Ephraim comes back to his own border, back to the land of Israel, that is the hope of Israel. The ministry of Yeshua is to gather the 10 tribes. Matthew chapter 4, verses 14 through 16. That it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by way of the sea beyond Jordan, Galilee the Gentiles. The people, that would be the 10 tribes, which sat in darkness, which didn't follow Torah, saw great light, that is the Messiah. And to them which sat in the region of the shadow of death, the region of shadow of death is a reference to exile. Light is sprung up. Light is the Messiah to redeem, to teach Torah, and to bring about the redemption. In Matthew chapter 4, verses 18 and 19, we see that in this process, fishermen are sent to gather the exiles of Israel. And Yeshua, walking by the Sea of Galilee, saw two brethren, Simon called Peter and Andrew his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And Yeshua said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. There's a prophecy in Jeremiah 16, verses 14 and 15, that fishermen would be sent to gather the exiles of Israel. Therefore, behold, the days come, says Yahweh, that it will no more be said, Yahweh lives that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but Yahweh lives that brought the children of Israel from the land of the north and from all the lands where he had driven them. And I will bring them again to their own land that I gave to their fathers. And I will send for many fishers. This happened at Yeshua's first coming and for the past 2,000 years. I will send for many fishers, says Yahweh. And I believe that the mission and the call of worldwide biblical Zionists is a task and a function of fishermen. we are calling and putting the net out to people and calling for those who love and support Israel to be caught in the net and to ultimately show Judah who you are and that you're ready to return to the land. And they will fish for them. And after, this is a reference to the end of days, the second coming, after he sends fishermen, will I send hunters. Who in the Bible is called a hunter? Well, we have Nimrod in Genesis in chapter 10. And then in Genesis 25, we have Esau. And so the hunters is a reference to the world system. It's a reference to Esau. It's a reference to radical Islam. And they will hunt them from every mountain, from every hill, and out of the holes of the rocks. The exiles of Israel are called men, or Adam. Where it says in Matthew 4:19, where Yeshua said, "Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men." In Ezekiel chapter 34, verse 31, and Ezekiel chapter 36, verse 10, the nation of Israel is called Adam, or men. And this point is shown in the art scroll of Ezekiel on page 30, where in reference to Ezekiel 34, verse 31, it says, "You," meaning Israel, "are Adam. And then the family of Israel in its entirety is called Adam, Ezekiel chapter 36 and verse 10. Let's summarize this section of the teaching which we covered. The ministry of Yeshua was based in the Galilee, where the 10 tribes were taken captive, to communicate his rule to gather the exiles of Israel. In the Galilee, Yeshua ministered in the city of Capernaum, which is in Hebrew means the village of comfort, because the ingathering of the exiles of Israel is associated in the prophets with Yahweh comforting his people. Yahweh gathers the exiles of Israel by sending fishers. This is a reference to followers of Yeshua who would proclaim his role to gather the exiles of Israel. And later, hunters, a reference to Esau or radical Islam, who through fear would cause the exiles of Israel to return to the land of Israel. Ezekiel lied on his left side to represent the sins of the 10 tribes. The art scroll of Ezekiel on page 119 from Ezekiel in chapter 4, verse 4, where it's Ezekiel was instructed by the Almighty to lie on your left side. Rashi explains that the left, or the northern side, symbolizes the northern kingdom, Samaria, and the right, or the southern side, the kingdom of Judah, the family of Israel. And it says, "And place the iniquity of the family of Israel upon it." In the Hebrew, we have untranslated in the text there, "And place the iniquity of the family of Israel upon it." We have an Aleph and a Tav. And so it says, "Aleph and Tav shall carry their sin." Aleph and Tav is a reference to Yeshua. When rendered into Greek in the book of Revelation, it says that Yeshua is the Alpha and the Omega. Next. Revelation 1, verses 7 and 8. Speaking of Yeshua, it says, "Behold, he comes with clouds, and every eye will see him, and they also which pierced him, and all kindreds of the earth shall wail because of him, even so, amen. I am Alpha and Omega," or Aleph and Tav, "the beginning and the ending, says Yahweh, which is, which was, which is to be, the Almighty." So the one that every eye will see is the Almighty, El Shaddai. The one that every eye will see is Alpha and Omega. The one that every eye will see is, which is the one who is, which was, which is to come, which is the meaning of Yahweh. It means to be eternally existent. He is. It explains in the art scroll of Ezekiel on page 109 and 110 that Ezekiel foreshadowed the Messiah carrying the burden of sin and suffering. The pain and suffering which the prophet would endure in the course of 390 days of immobility verses 5 and 8, would atone for the sins of the people. The comment interprets the verb nasha, the root of tasha, in our verse as to forgive. Indeed, we find such usage in other parts of the Bible. See Exodus 34, verse 7. Radok, however, renders tisa, not as related to forgiving, but as a bearing the guilt of sin. Going back to Exodus 28, verses 42 and 43. Harav Brower interprets the word, the root nasa, in its original sense as carrying, being weighed down by something. The sins of Israel weighed down the prophet. And now we're going to see, for further discussion of the concept that the suffering of a righteous man can atone for the community, is it found in Appendix 3 of the Art School of Ezekiel. So in Appendix 3, it explains the concept of the suffering of the righteous. In commentary to Ezekiel 4:4, an attempt was made to explain how Ezekiel's suffering might serve to atone for the sins of his people. The thesis was advanced that the sight of the Tzaddik's agony, the righteous agony, for which the people have been the cause, might inspire them to true repentance. The idea that the righteous suffers in lieu of the death of all or part of the community is elaborated upon in Sefer Hasidim. The passage begins with the discussion of the communal responsibility which rests on the entire nation of Israel. The principle is that all Israel are responsible one for another. The sin of one is the sin of all. Thus, in the confession on Yom Kippur, the high priest declares, "I have sinned together with all Israel." He says this whether or not he personally has sinned. This is in order that people come to feel a sense of love and responsibility for one another and learn to rebuke one another when sin is in the camp. Thus, according to the book of Hasidim, God's attribute of justice seeks a punishment for the entire community, but is satisfied when it is meted out only to the tzaddik, only to the righteous. Now we have the concept of the oneness of Israel. To understand this concept, we must once more revert to the idea which we have discussed throughout the commentary. That is the essential oneness of the community of Israel. While every individual is created in the image of God and is in himself a miniature world, God's justice can nevertheless address itself to the community of Israel as a whole. When the entire community is considered an invisible unit, then indeed every individual shares guilt for the sins of every other one. Paul explained this concept in the New Testament about one body, many members, one body. We as individuals are a part of the greater body, and if one in the body suffers, we all suffer. Right. Although the righteous cannot be said to have sinned as an individual, nevertheless, he can be said to have sinned as a part of the community. And by the same token, the suffering of the one can be seen as the suffering of the whole. That's where we get the concept of what happens to Israel happens to the Messiah. What happens to the Messiah happens to Israel, because they are one with each other. And that is why we have the principle from Isaiah 53, where modern Orthodox Judaism, Jews for Judaism, will argue that Isaiah 53 speaks about the suffering of the nation of Israel. And that's true. And traditional Christianity says Isaiah 53 speaks about the suffering of an individual, the Messiah. That's true as well. They're both true. The reason why one doesn't understand the other is because both of their arguments are right. And it's hard seeing the other person's point of view when you're right. It's hard seeing another person's point of view when you're right, and they're both right. In John chapter 11, verses 49 through 52, we see this principle that Messiah, a Tzaddik, a righteous one, he suffered for the sins of the entire nation of Israel. John 11:49, and one of them, named Caiaphas, being the high priest that same year, said, "You know nothing at all, nor consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the nation, and that the whole nation perish not." Next verse. "And this spake he not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Yeshua would die for that nation." What nation did Caiaphas prophesy that Yeshua would die for? It would be Judah, because the next verse says, "And not for that nation only." So Caiaphas prophesied that he would die for that nation, that meaning Judah, but it wasn't just for that nation only. It wasn't just for Judah. And so who is the other nation that Messiah is dying for? It would be the northern kingdom of Ephraim. And it goes on to say, but that he would gather together in one, unite both houses of Israel, unite Ephraim and Judah, who are called the children of God scattered abroad. So, what we see in the New Testament, the concept of it is straight from what the rabbis teach as well. Where in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 21, we see how the Messiah suffers for the sins of the nation of Israel. "For he has made him to be sin for us." He made Messiah to be sin for us. That would be corporate Israel. And the Messiah knew no sin. So we have Messiah who knew no sin. He suffered for corporate Israel. So that corporate Israel who sinned could partake of the righteousness of Messiah. How can that be? It's this community concept. If Messiah, who is righteous, can atone for the sins of the community, then the sins of the community through a righteous act, the community as a whole can be regarded as righteous, but only in Messiah. So that we might be made, that would be corporate Israel, the righteousness of God in Him. Let's look at a summary of these elements of the teaching. The entire nation of Israel are one people and are responsible for each other. You know, especially living in the United States of America, we live in a Greco-Roman society where we tend to think everyone for himself. But Israel is a community, and everyone is to help out and to be responsible for each other, to inquire of others' well-being if they're hurting or suffering, to help them. The sins of individuals have consequences for the entire nation of Israel. And a righteous individual from the nation of Israel can suffer to atone for the sins of the entire nation. Yeshua died on the tree, being a righteous person, suffering for the sins of the nation of Israel, to atone for the sins of the nation of Israel. In Hosea chapter 1, Hosea's marriage to Gomer foreshadowed the judgment of the 10 tribes. Hosea 1, verses 2 and 3, it says that Yahweh said to Hosea, "Go take a wife of whoredoms and children of whoredoms, for the land has committed great whoredom, departing from Yahweh." So, Hosea marries Gomer. And so, what is happening in Hosea's life is a prophecy of what was to come to the northern kingdom. In Hosea in chapter 1 and verse 4, there was a child that was born from the marriage between Hosea and Gomer, and the child's name is Jezreel, which means God will sow or God will scatter. In the Torah anthology on the Book of the 12 Prophets, volume 1, page 15, it explains from Hosea chapter 1 that Ephraim is scattered among the nations. Rashi's explanation is based upon the Targum, and I will visit the blood of Jezreel. In a literal sense, referring to the house of Ahab, who Jehu exterminated for worshiping Baal, 2 Kings chapter 10. But in the Targum, Jezreel is translated in Hebrew, and doing a play on the Hebrew, as being scattered. Call his name Jezreel. Thus means that Hosea prophesied the future exile of the 10 tribes. They would be scattered among the nations. The second child born from this marriage is named Lo Ruhamah, No Mercy. And she conceived and bare a daughter, and God said, call his name No Mercy, for I will have no more mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. The third child is named Lo Ami, which means not my people, Hosea 1:9. Then God said, call his name Lo Ami, not my people, for you are not my people, and I will not be your God. So when the God of Israel says, I'm going to scatter you among the nations, I'm not going to show you mercy, and you're not my people, that's not good. However, there's a principle in the Bible that when the God of Israel gives rebuke, he follows it by words of mercy and compassion. And so in the Torah Anthology, the volume in the Book of the 12 Prophets, volume 1, page 18, speaking of the northern kingdom being called not my people, the commentary is that the scripture now refers to the days of weak rule in the Israelite kingdom of Samaria. The situation is described by saying, call his name not my people, for you are not my people, I will not be to you. God speaks like a father who says to his son, this is not my son. According to the Targum, says Rashi, this means that the entire generation would be obliterated by merging into the nations among whom they were banished. Next. After saying, no mercy, not my people, the prophecy goes on to give words of encouraging comfort and hope. Hosea chapter 1 verse 10 says, and it will come to pass in the place where it was said, you are not my people, there will be said, you are the sons of the living God. Who is a son of the living God? That is somebody who is in covenant relationship with the God of Israel, who is a believer in Yeshua as the Messiah. John 1:12, as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. Now Hosea 1:11 says, after it was says it will come to pass in the place where it says you are not my people, it will be said you are the sons of the living God, it then says, then, meaning after it is said you are a son of the living God. So following those of the northern kingdom believing in Yeshua as the Messiah, that's being a son of the living God. So first you're going to have those of the northern kingdom who's got to believe that Yeshua is the Messiah. Then the prophecy says after they believe that he's the Messiah, then the children of Judah and the children of Israel will be gathered together. They will be gathered together. And following that, they will appoint themselves one head. And they will come up out of the land. For great shall be the day of Jezreel. So as I was contemplating that we are living in the end of days, that we are living in the time where we're going to see Ephraim and Judah come together, with all of the complications there are for that to happen, with the differences that there are in that Ephraim believes that Yeshua is the Messiah, and Judah follows the God of Israel, believe that Yeshua is the Messiah, how is this process going to happen? As I was praying one day, I felt in my spirit that God gave me that verse, Hosea chapter 1, verse 11. Go back. and that this was a divine order in which it was going to happen. What was going to happen first is that the children of Judah and the children of Israel would be gathered together. First, they would be gathered together, and secondly, they will appoint themselves one head. And the problem that we've been having is both sides want to get to the end game first and declare the end game before they start. So they want to say, well, unless I see that you believe that Yeshua is the Messiah, then we can't walk together. And Judah, rabbinical Judaism, says, well, unless you get united the way we believe it's going to happen, meaning you come under rabbinic authority, then we can't be a part of it. So both are trying to appoint themselves one head before they walk together. And the divine order is that they will walk together first and appoint themselves one head. And I believe with all my heart that Worldwide Biblical Zionist is a vehicle and a tool to begin the process of the gathering together. And we need to do step one, to begin the process to gather together. And when we do that process, then both ultimately will appoint themselves one head. How do we know? Because that's what the prophecies say. So what that means is the Messiah has to reveal himself in the process of us gathering ourselves together. The Messiah will reveal himself in the process of us gathering ourselves together. Now, often, when we have a dialogue about the Messiah, and you're speaking to a Jew or an Orthodox Jew, they want to have this thought in the process. And let's not get into an argument about who the Messiah is. How about this? How about when the Messiah comes to Jerusalem, we'll ask him, is this your first coming? Is this your first time here? Or is this your second time here? And, you know, for where we are at now, I think that's a good way to handle it. When the Messiah reveals himself, we'll say, is this your first coming or is this your second coming? And that should enable us to walk together to what? Israel is responsible for one another. Israel is to serve one another. Israel is to be a community, a family, a brotherhood. And if we will be that Israel family, then Messiah will be revealed. Because Echad has a Hebrew gematria of 13. And Echad represents one. So you have the 12 tribes in unity plus one equals the revelation of Messiah. And so I believe it's very important for us to begin this process of gathering ourselves together. Now, in Genesis in chapter 49, Genesis in chapter 49, verse 1, it says, Jacob called unto his sons and says, gather yourselves together, that I may tell you what will befall you in the end of days. Notice the order. Gather yourselves together, and then I'll tell you what will befall you in the end of days. What we try to do, we've tried to completely define the end of days, how it's all going to happen, and we say we can't gather together unless we agree on how it's all going to, the end of days has got to come about. If you're not doing it right, because we believe it's going to be this way. And so, but the order is gather yourselves together, and then you will understand the end of days. Hosea 1:11 is gather yourselves together and you appoint yourselves one head. And so, once again, I believe that Worldwide Biblical Zionists is a vessel and a tool being used by the Almighty to begin that process of gathering ourselves together in preparation for the redemption. Next. In the Art Scroll on the Book of the 12 Prophets, Volume 1, page 13, in commentary to Hosea chapter 1 verse 11, it says, the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be assembled together. unlike the renewal of the era of the Second Temple when the tribes of Judah and Benjamin formed the majority of the populace, the final redemption will see the tribes of both the kingdom of Judah and that of Israel restored in the land. This is the commentary from Radok. And they will appoint themselves one head. They shall all follow the leadership of the Messiah, the descendant of King David. This is from the Targums and also iterated by Rashi and Radok. Next. What's the summary of this part of the teaching? The judgment upon the 10 tribes for departing from Torah and their restoration is the subject of the book of Hosea. The names of the children born to the marriage of Hosea and Gomer foreshadow the judgment of the 10 tribes. The restoration and redemption of the 10 tribes comes through the Messiah of Israel. And John 11, 49-52 tells us Yeshua died on the tree to gather the exiles of Israel. In the art scroll of Ezekiel, on pages 204 and 205, it explains that the 10 tribes wandered in the nations, and when they went into the nations, they didn't leave any trace of communal life, that they were a nation and a community of peoples. And from Ezekiel, in chapter 4, it says, "And you shall bring out your implements like implements of exile by day before their eyes and go out in the evening before their eyes as in exile exiting." The commentary is he was to depict two different exiles. The first exile portrayed aimless wandering without indication of a specific destination, even as the northern kingdom 10 tribes had been dragged away to unknown places, leaving no trace of communal life. From the Torah Anthology in the Book of the 12 Prophets, Volume 1, page 131, commentary to Hosea chapter 7, verse 8, where it says, "Ephraim has mingled himself among the peoples." It says, "He has mingled himself among the peoples," meaning that they assimilated into the nations, thus leaving no trace of communal life. From the book A Matter of Return by Rabbi Raphael Eisenberg on page 137, he explains how Ephraim has become intermingled into the nations and thus defiled. The Tiferet Israel commentary explains Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that the 10 tribes will rejoin Judah in spite of the fact that they have been intermingled and have been defiled. Based upon the Ezekiel's prophecy, "As I live, says Yahweh Elohim, surely with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm will I deliver my people." Now, the prophecy in Hosea chapter 8 is that Ephraim will not be following Torah in exile. And it says in Hosea chapter 8, verse 11, "Because Ephraim has made many altars to sin, altars shall be made to him to sin." In other words, there will be obstacles in exile for Ephraim to follow Torah. And it says, "I have written to him," that is Ephraim, "the great things of my Torah, but they were counted as a strange thing." And what are many of us trying to do now in trying to eat biblically? We're looking in the package and what's in this ingredient. Does that have a little thing that's associated with the pig or not? And, you know, because everything is the way they are in exile, it's very complicated to have things separated and clean and to follow Torah the way we should be following Torah. So in Hosea chapter 9, verse 3, there's a prophecy that Ephraim in exile will eat unclean things. Shrimp, pepperoni, bacon. "And they shall not dwell in Yahweh's land, but Ephraim will return to Egypt, and Ephraim will eat unclean things in Assyria." From the book Moses and the Original Torah by Abba Hillel Silver, Macmillan Publishing, 1961, it explains that Ephraim and Judah are not united today. Two distinct traditions are reflected in the historic and legal writings of the Bible, one of northern Israel and the other of southern Judah. In a sense, Israel and Judah were always two separate peoples. Did you catch that? In a sense, Israel and Judah were always two separate peoples. They were never truly united. And you know what the irony of the things I'm showing you from rabbinical sources and Orthodox Jewish teachings, stating clearly that Ephraim and Judah have not been united together? We have Messianic Jews, those of associated with the UMJC and the MJAA, the Messianic Jewish Alliance of America and the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations, who are striving to get particularly Orthodox Jews to believe that Yeshua is the Messiah, while at the same time they have plastered on their websites that the thought that the 12 tribes have not been united today is complete and utter heresy. Well, the way that Orthodox Judaism defines who the Messiah is that the Messiah gathers the 12 tribes of Israel. So, according to Orthodox Jewish thought, traditional Jewish thought, that it's the Messiah that unites the 12 tribes of Israel, when Messianic Jews are trying to say to Orthodox Jews that Yeshua is Messiah, but the 12 tribes have already been united, what an Orthodox Jew is hearing is Yeshua cannot be the Messiah. If you're trying to say that the 12 tribes have already been united, because it's the Messiah who accomplishes that task. And so they're trying to reach a people and they don't even know the basics of what they believe. So here, Moses in the original Torah, it says, Israel and Judah were always two separate peoples. They were never truly united, even during the period of the United Kingdom. They parted completely and forever after the revolution of Jeroboam in 933. These two peoples shared a common racial origin and many ancestral memories, but their historical experiences from earliest times differed sharply. Now, on top of what I just said, the irony is that Orthodox Jews, rabbinical Jews, know that the 12 tribes haven't been united and they're waiting for the Messiah to do this. Meanwhile, Messianic Judaism tries to claim that that has already happened. It was this issue that Moses Nachmanides wrote a book, and the book is called The Book of Redemption. And the main purpose in writing the book is showing that the 12 tribes have not been united today, and to show, using Ezra and Nehemiah, that in the return from Babylon, that those who mainly returned were from Judah, Levi, and Benjamin, and only a small number from the 10 tribes who had went to Babylon with Judah. There were a small number of the 10 tribes who were sojourning with Judah and have always sojourned with Judah and went to Babylon, but Nachmanides has got to point out the majority, the vast majority of the 10 tribes were separate from Judah and went their own way. So based upon this principle, would there be those of all 12 tribes living in Israel today? The answer would be yes. But those of the 10 tribes who are living in Israel today are going to be just a very small number of all those of the 10 tribes. The vast majority of the 10 tribes are going to be living outside of Israel today. So from the book of redemption, go back one. At the second redemption, this is a Nachmanides from the book of redemption on page 9. At the second redemption, that is the redemption for Babylonian exile, there returned to the land of Israel only a fraction of the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. This is Ezra chapter 1, verse 5. And Nachmanides, in his commentary on the Torah to Leviticus, page 468, He explains, there came up from Babylon, for only the tribes of Judah and Benjamin returned together with a small group of Levites who were with them. Next. Continuing Nachmanides' commentary on the Torah to Leviticus, page 469. Of the other tribes, some, but not all. Some of the other tribes, but not all. And therefore the words of God, as spoken by his prophets, will still be fulfilled in the future when the Geula Shlema, the perfect redemption, will take place, as the return from Babylon did not represent the final and complete redemption, meaning the uniting of all 12 tribes. It is obvious that this constitutes a major principle in our faith of Israel's future and destiny. Did you catch that? The unification of the 12 tribes to the religious Jews, it is obvious that the uniting of the 12 tribes is a major principle of our faith. The uniting of the 12 tribes is a major principle of our faith that will happen in the future. So when Messianic Jews have on their website that it's heresy that that there is Ephraim and Judah and they will be reunited in the end days, that they already reunited in the days of the kings, they are violating a major principle of Jewish faith. And on that issue, who is biblically correct? The rabbinical Jews or the Messianic Jews? Of course, it's the rabbinical Jews. And so it's interesting how things are today. Go back. Next slide. Now, from Nachmanides' commentary on the Torah to Leviticus, page 472. He's going to quote here from Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 1. And it shall come to pass when all these things are come upon you, the blessing and the curse. And it goes on to say in Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 5, and he will do good and multiply you above your fathers, this being a promise to all the tribes of Israel, not just the tribes of Judah, Benjamin, and Levi. And then the commentary to that is, the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, which constitute one-sixth of the 12 tribes, Ramban, that is, Nachmanides, is thus stating that the redemption from the Babylonian exile was not a complete redemption, since the return consisted mainly of two tribes with small groups of the other tribes. Next. From the Torah Anthology, on the Book of the 12 Prophets, Volume 2, page 254, they explain that the 10 tribes did not return from exile during the first century. At that time I will bring you, and at that time I will assemble you, for I will make you a name, I will make you a name and a praise among all the peoples of the earth when I restore your captivity before your eyes. And I believe that this is from Zephaniah in chapter 3 and verse 20. And so the commentary says, at that time I will bring you, meaning the 10 tribes back to your land. In the time of the Second Temple, you did not return to your country, but in the future redemption, I will bring you back. The Torah Anthology for the Book of the 12 Prophets, Volume 2, page 411, explains that a minority of the 10 tribes lived and sojourned with Judah. When the Samaritan kingdom was overrun by Assyria and its people exiled, including the 10 tribes, a minority of the tribe of Ephraim remained in the kingdom of Judah. In the days of the Second Temple, when only two of the tribes returned to the Holy Land, for that matter, only a select few from among those two tribes went back. See Ezra chapter 2, verse 64 and following. However, in the future redemption, all the tribes will assemble in the land of Israel. Nachmanides, in the Book of Redemption on page 30, continues explaining and proving thoroughly from Ezra and Nehemiah that all the 12 tribes did not return at that time. It is known that during the redemption in Ezra's time, only the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, who were exiled by Nebuchadnezzar to the country of Babylon, returned to the land, as it is stated in the beginning of the account of that redemption. Then rose up the heads of the fathers, houses of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and the Levites. This is Ezra chapter 1 and verse 5. When they returned, it is said, now these are the children of the province that went up out of the captivity of those that had been carried away, whom Nebuchadnezzar the king of Babylon had carried away to Babylon, and that returned unto Jerusalem and Judah, every one unto his own city. That is Ezra chapter 2, verse 1. When the second house of God was founded, as it is stated, now when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the children of the captivity were building a temple unto the God of Israel, that's Ezra chapter 4, verse 1. Next. Afterward, it is written pertaining to the matter of separating from the foreign women, and they made proclamation throughout Judah and Jerusalem unto all the children of the captivity that they should gather together unto Jerusalem, as it is written, then all the men of Judah and Benjamin gathered themselves together unto Jerusalem. That would be Ezra chapter 10 and verse 7. When they settled in the land, it is still further written, and the princes of the people dwelt in Jerusalem. The rest of the people also cast lots to bring one of 10 to dwell in Jerusalem, the holy city, in 9 parts to the other cities. That is Nehemiah chapter 11 verse 1. There it is stated, and in Jerusalem dwelt certain of the children of Judah, and these are the sons of Benjamin. Nehemiah chapter 11, verses 4 through 7. The enumeration of the cities of their settlements corresponds to those places mentioned in the book of Joshua as the portions of Judah and Benjamin. Notwithstanding, with all this proof that only Judah and Benjamin ascended to the land in the period of the Second Temple, we nevertheless admit to the words of the sages of blessed memory, forbear that we should differ with them, who say in Seder Olam, the order of the world, in connection with those who entered the land in the days of Ezra, the whole congregation together was 42,303. This is Ezra chapter 2, verse 64. In exact specification, however, they total only 30,000. Where are the other 12,000? These are the ones from the other tribes who ascended to the land. I will now explain this matter to you. You have already learned that during the second redemption, only those who were exiled to Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar returned to the land. It was upon them that the 70 years of the Babylonian exile had been decreed. They were the tribes of Judah and Benjamin and the priests. Next. Who dwelt in Jerusalem. Together they comprised the kingdom of Judah, as it is written, when the formerly united kingdom of David and Solomon were divided, and Judah and Benjamin adhered to him. That would be David, 2 Chronicles chapter 11, verse 12. Rehoboam, the king of Judah, and the priests and the Levites that were in all Israel presented themselves to him out of their border. 2 Chronicles chapter 11, verse 13. The kingdom of Israel, however, formed by the 10 tribes, were exiled by Sennacherib, king of Assyria, just as is written. For he rent Israel from the house of David, and they made Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, king, and Jeroboam drew Israel away from following the Lord. 2 Kings 17, verse 21. So Israel was carried away out of their own land to Assyria unto this day. 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 25. This is proof that the entire kingdom of Israel was exiled to Assyria, although the kingdom of the house of This is proof that the entire kingdom of Israel was exiled to Assyria, although the kingdom of the house of David remained where it was until Nebuchadnezzar carried them away to Babylon. These Babylonian exiles were the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. At first glance, that which is written concerning Sennacherib exiling the 10 tribes, when it was said that there was none left but the tribe of Judah alone, this appears to contradict our statement that the tribe of Benjamin also remained. However, The explanation is that the phrase the tribe of Judah is an allusion to that tribe's kingdom, which consisted of the two tribes mentioned, Judah and Benjamin. It seems from the literal meaning of Scripture that before the captivity of the land by Sennacherib, there assembled together in the cities of Judah men from the neighboring tribes of Manasseh, Ephraim, and Simeon. Who were in the midst of Judah's inheritance, as it is written, of the reign of Josiah, and they delivered the money that was brought in the house of God, which the Levites, the keepers of the door, and gathered the hand of Manasseh and Ephraim and all the remnant of Israel and all Judah. This is 2 Chronicles chapter 34, verse 9. This is the scripture that has tripped up the Messianic Jews, trying to say from this scripture that all the 12 tribes have been united. Nachmanides is doing an excellent job, a scholarly, professional job of explaining what's really happening here. Next. Previously in the days of Asa, king of Judah, long before the exile of the 10 tribes, it is written, and Asa gathered all Judah and Benjamin and them that sojourned with them out of Ephraim and Manasseh and out of Simeon, for they came over to him out of Israel in abundance when they saw that the Eternal, his God, was with him. And so it says, all of this indicates that there were men of the 10 tribes among Judah and Benjamin, and apparently were exiled and redeemed together with them. This explanation, however, is as follows. These present ones of Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon, who lived in the land of Judah, or perhaps dwelt in some of their tribe's cities close to Judah, were exiled to Babylon together with Judah and Benjamin. However, they were referred to as a general group under the name of Judah, not by the specific names of their tribes. This is because there were among them only part of each tribe. They were counted together with those who began the journey from Babylon in the time of Ezra, but they were not enumerated by name. It is only that they returned in conjunction with the house of Judah and settled in the cities around Jerusalem, but there was no redemption for their own tribes who had been exiled to Assyria by Sennacherib. Our rabbi stated that during the period of the Second Temple, some of the remnants of the tribes of the rest of the tribes came up from their captivity. These remnants were not from all of the other tribes, but only from the children of Ephraim and Manasseh, and their numbers were insufficient to warrant them being even designated a tribe or a part of a tribe. Instead, because of their small number, they were joined to the two tribes of Judah and Benjamin, and they lived among them. For the return from Babylonian captivity in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah was mainly unto the tribes of Judah and Benjamin. Continuing on in the Book of Redemption, page 34, by Nachmanides, nevertheless, from our words, it has been explained that the redemption from Babylon, only those who were called the house of Judah returned to the land, and this was their kingdom during the Second Temple. However, those from the house of Ephraim, or the house of Israel, comprising the 10 tribes, did remain in the Assyrian captivity to this day. No sign of deliverance was raised for their tribes, and there were none that escaped during this redemption, as we have mentioned. Next. Let's summarize what we just covered in this section of the teaching. The 10 tribes will be assimilated into nations and lose their tribal and community identity. In exile, the 10 tribes are prophesied to not follow Torah and eat unclean food in the nations where they would be scattered. A minority of the 10 tribes are living with the house of Judah today. There has not been a reunification of the 10 tribes with Judah, and it won't happen until Messianic times, the end of days. Now, there is a very profound prophecy in Ezekiel chapter 11, beginning in verses 14 and 15, that the house of Judah living in the land will say to the 10 tribes who haven't returned that the land of Israel belongs to them. Again, the word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, your brethren, even your brethren, the men of your kindred and all the house of Israel holy, are they... So, when it talks about the men of your kindred and all the house of Israel holy, it's a reference to the 10 tribes. Of the 10 tribes, it is they unto whom the inhabitants of Jerusalem, that would be Judah, have said, Get you far from the Lord, because unto us is this land given in possession. Now, Ezekiel 11, verse 16, it says, Therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, Although I have cast them far among the heathen, that would be the 10 tribes, and although I have scattered them among the countries, again referring to the 10 tribes, yet will I be to them as a little sanctuary in the countries where they shall come. The prophecy is that the Almighty would be a little sanctuary to the 10 tribes where they were scattered. Now, Yeshua said in Matthew 18, verse 20, For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. He's a little sanctuary to them. So, in the art scroll of Ezekiel, page 198, the commentary to, Though I have removed them afar off, yet I have been for them a little sanctuary. Throughout the book, the Hebrew verb for scatter is used in parallel to the Hebrew word for disperse. It is only here that remove far off is used together with being dispersed. This, it's showing you this explanation through the Hebrew language. This seems to echo the slight which the dwellers of Jerusalem have hurled against the exiles. Get you far from Hashem. Although I have indeed exiled them among the nations, they are destined to be gathered from among them and to be brought back to Israel. You know the irony about this? Is we have an Orthodox Jewish commentary, the Art Scroll on Ezekiel, which acknowledges that Judah would say to the 10 tribes that you don't belong in the land. While at the same time, Orthodox Jews in the land are saying to Judah, you don't belong... Now, meanwhile, Orthodox Jews in the land are saying to Ephraim, you don't belong to the land. There's a commentary saying that they would say that. So there's a commentary that says they're acknowledging that they would say that. But Orthodox Jewish material is so vast that is it in the forefront of the knowledge of the average Orthodox Jew that's walking in the streets of Jerusalem that about this prophecy? They probably are not even aware of it. Next. Ezekiel 11, verse 17, Therefore says Yahweh Elohim, I will even gather you from the people and assemble you out of the country where you've been scattered, and I will give you the land of Israel. That's Ephraim and Judah coming together. When will this happen? It happens during messianic times. So as we see things unfolding before our eyes, we know, we have absolute proof that we are living in messianic times. We're living at the dawn, the shadow of messianic times. Because those things that the prophet said would happen in messianic times are already happening today, in the process of happening today. One of the things that's associated with messianic times is the nations would divide the land of Israel. One of the things associated with messianic times is that the Medes would be in a conflict. Iran and Iraq would be in conflict with an end-time powerful nation of the earth. That's codenamed Babylon in the scriptures, which if you just do a little bit of study, you can see it's a reference to the United States. So the Art Scroll of Ezekiel, page 198 and 199, the commentary to Ezekiel chapter 11, verses 17 through 20, since the entire exiled community, including the 10 tribes, were the butt of Jerusalem's scorn, it follows that the forthcoming promise of reconciliation includes them all. He will say, and I will assemble you from the nations. There, in promising God's ultimate redemption, Moses said, in Deuteronomy 30, verses 3 and 4, and I will assemble you from among all the nations, from there shall he assemble you. Ezekiel's prophecy in this passage is the complete redemption, that's the unification of all 12 tribes, which is associated with messianic times. And this was not fulfilled during the return from Babylon. So therefore, Ezekiel 11, verses 17 through 20 must refer to future times, to messianic times. From the Art Scroll of Ezekiel, page 200, it says, many of the exiles resettled in the land of Israel, including some of the 10 tribes. And here, they told you to refer to Nachmanides' commentary on this, which I just shared with you earlier. And Ezekiel's vision, in its fullest sense, will be fulfilled only in the days of the Messiah. And I will assemble you, and I will gather you in. The Hebrew verb was that asaf. Gather in is not used again in conjunction with assemble. Next, thus its use would imply that far from having been rejected by Jerusalem, as the dwellers of Jerusalem have scornfully claimed, the exiles would one day be brought inside the holy city of Jerusalem. Let's summarize this part of the teaching. The house of Judah, from Ezekiel 11, is prophesied to say to the 10 tribes that the land of Israel belongs exclusively to them. The 10 tribes will return to the land of Israel in the end of days and be unified with the house of Judah. The Messiah of Israel will rule over a unified house of Judah and Ephraim during the Messianic era. Next. Well, that concludes this teaching on what the rabbis teach about the 10 tribes. And as we can see from this, this is actually part one. There's a second teaching of it as well. What's that? There's a second teaching of it as well, which we're not going to be covering today. But as you can see, it's well documented that Ephraim and Judah are not united today. They will be reunited during Messianic times. And that this is a main principle of Jewish belief. And so, if there is any chance for us to be united with Judah in the land in these end of days, they are waiting upon Ephraim in the nations to reveal themselves. And when Ephraim reveals himself in the nations, at least the religious Jews who have studied the redemption will understand that this is the signaling of messianic times in the end of the exile of the house of Jacob. And this is the process which is foreshadowed in Genesis, wherein Joseph revealed himself to his brothers. And that is what we're beginning to see right now, is that Joseph, or Ephraim in the nations, is beginning a process of revealing himself to his brother Judah. And when both recognize each other, love one another, respect one another, then we will be able to sit down in the same table and have fellowship one with another. And the complete plan of the God of Israel, as outlined in the book we call the Bible, it will be clear, and we will understand everything that the Torah and the prophets write about. We will be able to see clearly history. We'll be able to see what's going on now, and we're going to see how it ultimately was all a part of the Almighty's plan. And so I pray that this message has been helpful and timely to you, especially since the Almighty has done miraculous things in providing and making an opportunity available to us. And an invitation has come from Judah in the land, from Jewish leadership in the land, for those who love Israel, who love Zion, to stand together, to be united, and to join with Judah in the land. I know of no other time since the founding of the State of Israel where Jewish leadership in the land has invited non-Jews to stand with them, to partner with them, and to live with them. And so this in and of itself, miracle by the Almighty. And this is only the beginning of miracles, which you're going to begin to see. The miracles are going to be so huge that the world's got to witness it. And the prophecies say that the miracles of the end of days will exceed the miracles of Egypt. So that when we celebrate Passover in the kingdom, we will not be talking about how he gathered his people out of Egypt, but we will be telling the story about how he gathered his people from all the nations where they've been scattered, where the world, not just one Pharaoh in one country, but the world opposed it. Because there is a prophecy in Zephaniah in chapter 9 and verse 13. That there's got to be a conflict in the end of days. And Zechariah chapter 9 verse 13 says the following: When I have bent Judah for me and filled the bow with Ephraim, and I've raised up your sons of Zion against your sons of Greece. That's the battle right now. The sons of Zion are being opposed to sons of Greece. Now historically, in the days of the Maccabees, there were Jews who wanted to be assimilated and be accepted by the nations and wanted to be like the nations. They were called Hellenistic Jews. They were identifying with the sons of Greece. And what does the nations of the world want Israel to do? The nations are pressuring Israel to be like them and to conform to the world plan. The world in its system is going to oppose the plan of the God of Israel to bring back the sons of Zion, Ephraim and Judah, because it's going to be contrary to the world's plan for peace in the Middle East and peace in the world. So we're going to have a replay of the showdown of the sons of Zion in the end of days, Ephraim and Judah, going to go to the world and say through the God of Israel, let my people go. And he's as Pharaoh said no, the world is going to say no. And so the God of Israel has purposely orchestrated the way things are in the world so that he can reveal himself to the world, even as he revealed himself to Egypt and all the countries when he brought his people out of Egypt. And that is why it says regarding this event in Isaiah 34 verse 8, it says, for it's the day of the Almighty's vengeance in the year of recompenses for the controversy of Zion. The Bible says there is going to be a controversy of Zion. What's the controversy? The sons of Zion are going to be against the sons of Greece. But the sons of Zion are commanded to be strong, because it says in Isaiah 62, for Zion's sake I will not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest. Verse 6, I have set watchmen on your walls, O Jerusalem. Who's the watchman? Ephraim and Judah, who are anticipating and looking and working for the redemption. Those are the watchmen. I will set watchmen upon your walls, O Jerusalem, which shall never hold their peace day or night. And you that make mention of Yahweh, keep not silent. We're commanded to not keep silent. And here's what he says: give him no rest till he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth. When does he make Jerusalem a praise in the earth? When he unites Ephraim and Judah. Because that is messianic times. That is the end of the exile. That is the judgment upon the nations, the fall of the nations, and there will no longer be Gentile rule in the world. Hallelujah. We have the fall of Gentile rule in the earth, the uniting of Ephraim and Judah is the rise of Israel to be the head of all nations. And what do we call the head of all nations? Messianic times. And we are now in the process of making that transition. So I pray the message has been a blessing to you. Until we do it again, Shalom, in Yeshua the Messiah. Amen.